Chapter 15. The next morning, I woke to Sophie in her human form, buzzing about my apartment. The moment my eyes opened, she smiled at me.
Time to get up! I need a ride to the airport!
Why? Are you going somewhere?
I asked, rubbing the sleep from my eyes.
No! We have a guest! She replied. My friend, the geneticist!
I sat up and tilted my head, not awake enough.
She lives by the airport?
No, silly! She is flying in this morning!
Sophie laughed. I swung my legs over the side of the bed and ran my fingers through my hair.
I'm missing something.
I texted her last night. I didn't want to wait until this morning. She's already on her way here,
Sophie explained.
What does this woman do that she can just drop everything and fly away?
I chuckled, genuinely curious, because I'd assumed she had a job in a lab somewhere. Guessing my assumption, Sophie replied,
She owns the lab. She can do whatever she wants.
Hmm, I muttered. Makes more sense. I'll jump in the shower.
Good. Veda will meet us at her apartment, since she's the one with the lab,
Sophie informed me. The nerd in Veda had made her build a mini-lab in the extra bedroom in her apartment. None of us had ever been in there, because Veda was worried about contamination. We didn't argue with her. 20 minutes later, Sophie and I stood at the curb outside the airport, greeting a 40-something tall, wiry woman with short black hair.
Sage Greeno, this is Stephen Fenley. Stephen, Sage,
Sophie introduced us.
Oh, nice to meet you, Stephen.
Sage held out her hand for a surprisingly strong handshake.
Same, I replied.
Thank you for making time so quickly.
When a shapeshifter calls in a favor, it waits for no one,
she replied, winking at Sophie. I whipped my head around to Sophie.
She knows? Yeah,
Sophie giggled.
She knows. I tried to figure out a little more about myself several years back. Sage was someone I knew I could trust. She is one of the very few humans that knows about me.
Well, that gives me a ton of confidence in your abilities, knowing Sophie trusts you like that,
I said to Sage.
Sage laughed.
Please, reserve judgment. I still didn't nail down how Sophie is what she is, or even her origin.
Regardless, I think character counts for a lot, I replied. Sage smiled.
Thank you. Now, where is this lab? And what am I testing?
Sophie and I took turns filling Sage in on recent events as we drove to Veda's apartment. Veda was standing in the open doorway when we arrived, a look of wonder on her face. I imagined she felt like a child about to spend time with her favorite new toy. It wasn't often Veda was around anyone who could understand even half of what was in her brain. After introductions, Veda took Sage directly to the lab. The two of them disappeared, leaving Sophie and me to look after ourselves. I plopped down in a lounger and looked around. Wonder how long this is going to take?
No clue, but it does seem like something that would be a quick process,
she replied. It wasn't nearly as long as we thought it would be before Veda returned to her living room.
We can go now.
Sophie and I stood up.
Go where?
I asked.
We need to get the fingerprint analyzed, don't we?
Veda replied, furrowing her brow at me.
What about Sage? I figured you'd be stuck in the lab with her for hours, I replied.
Nah, she's got this, Veda replied. It doesn't take two to run those tests. I picked her brain about the process and such, and now we need to just leave her to her work. I gave her the dead rat and the dirt, too. There were some rat droppings in the dirt she seemed particularly interested in.
Weird thing to be interested in,
Sophie laughed.
I'll never fully understand you sciencey types.
No need for you to understand,
Veda laughed back.
Now, let's go.
It turned out that Veda's friend, Patrick Foyle, lived about 30 minutes away. Even with how close it was, the drive seemed to take forever. It was an unfortunate side effect of living on an island where most things weren't more than 20 minutes away, if that, in any direction. When Veda pointed out a nearly hidden dirt driveway off the side of the small highway we were on, it felt like I was driving us to our horror movie Doom. The trees closed in over the van,
and it became so dark I had to turn on the headlights, regardless of it being the middle of the day. Sophie took a few moments to shift back into canine form, and then we found ourselves in a small clearing, pulling up in front of a broken-down shack of a house.
"Somebody lives here?" Sophie asked me telepathically. "What a dump!"
I put a hand on Veda's shoulder as she started to open the van door. "Are you sure about this? This place doesn't look like anyone respectable would live in it."
"Oh, Patrick is perfectly respectable. He's just a bit of a minimalist and hates people," she replied cheerily.
"In fact, now that I think about it, it may be best if you wait here." "I'm good with that,"
Sophie's voice rang out in my head. "You're not a human, and I don't want Veda going in there alone," I told Sophie, not bothering to relay our conversation to Veda.
"Ah, shit," Sophie replied. "Fine."
I wasn't at all comfortable with the girls going by themselves, but I trusted Veda, and I also knew Sophie would eat anyone who may try to hurt her. The moment the girls made their way up the stairs onto a rickety, sunken porch, the front door of the shack opened. A young boy, no more than 18 years old, stood in the doorway. He rushed out and wrapped Veda in a big hug that reminded me of a little brother hugging his big sister. I hadn't known the friend Veda referred to was barely more than a kid. My mind started to wander over the possible reasons he would be living in a nearly condemned rat hole of a house at his age. The girls disappeared inside, and I leaned back in my seat. I did enjoy the quiet that the place had to offer. The only sounds were from various birds and bugs that lived in the trees and bushes surrounding the clearing. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Maybe the kid was onto something out here. The next thing I knew, Veda and Sophie were getting back in the van.
"Are you sleeping?" Veda asked, laughing at me.
"Apparently, unless you were only gone for 10 seconds, I replied, sitting up.
"It's been almost 30 minutes, Veda replied.
"How do you know that kid?" I asked, changing the subject. "He doesn't seem old enough to barely be living on his own, much less out in a place like this."
"He is the little brother of a client that came through the dive shop years ago. The kid was visiting with his family as a tourist and fell in love with the place and with the potential for research here. He chatted me up about living on the island, and although he had to leave the moment he was 17 and convinced his parents to let him move out early, he came back," Veda told us. "I check in on him from time to time. He hasn't decided on a research path, so he dabbles in a little of everything. Our run-in with the direwolf mystery inspired him to look into forensic sciences for a while. That is why I can bring him things like fingerprints to run."
"Well, that's a convenient friend to have," I replied. "And that is very nice of you to inspire him like that."
"Thank you," Veda replied as I started the engine. "It's kinda nice knowing I helped the kid follow his own path."
"Are you two going to get to the important part of this conversation?"
Sophie's voice rang out in my mind. I started turning the van around and asked, "Did he find who the print belonged to?"
"Yep," Veda replied, excitement lighting up her face. "Frederick Hammonlock."
"That's a mouthful," I chuckled. "Any information on the guy?"
"That is where it gets a little strange," Veda replied. "His prints were in the system, but they didn't have much in the way of usual information with them. No picture, just a state and age."
"How was that possible?" I asked as I pulled the van back onto the main road.
"I'm not certain. The system said he was 53 years old, but his prints were obviously taken well before digital systems. I don't know if he would be 53 now or when the prints were put into the database," Veda outlined the dilemma.
"Hey, we have a name at least. Let's get to the travel agency and see what we can find. We need to see if Freya and Delaney need any help. Hopefully they are handling the cancellations better than we did when we first started helping them."
I chuckled at the length of time it had taken for us to realize a recorded message to incoming callers would do the work of explaining to wordy travelers why they shouldn't cancel their trips.
"Is that where those two are?" Veda asked. "I meant to ask you earlier. They didn't call this morning, so I figured they were busy off doing something."
"The travel business never rests.
What is that?
Sophie's voice, alarmed and loud in my mind, nearly shouted. I focused my attention on the road in front of me and saw a crowd of people in the middle of the street. I wasn't moving quickly, thank goodness, so I could bring the van to a quick stop. We'd just reached the edge of the main business district. Even though the group was several people thick, I could still make out the red and blue flashing of police lights. What the hell is going on up there? The three of us were out of the van and circling the throng of people in no time at all. We headed for the police lights, hoping Irving was around and could tell us what was going on. We had to push our way through some of the noisiest tourists I'd ever met. But eventually, we found ourselves standing next to a bright yellow strip of crime scene tape. Irving stood 3 feet on the other side and waved us through as soon as he saw us.
Y'all aren't going to like this.
What happened?
Veda asked, looking around. There were cops, forensic scientists, and medical professionals mulling about, and it was difficult figuring out what they were all there for.
We have another passenger victim, Irving said, shriveled just like the rest.
Wait, there's no way, I replied. There were only 9 people let off that boat, and we already have 9 bodies that tell us they are all dead. How could there suddenly be another one?
All we can figure is that someone at the station miscounted when they checked them through. It sounds crazy, I know. We were all convinced we only had 9 with us. Then a younger deputy, which I've already put on temporary leave, said something about one of the passengers coming in later. Apparently, he didn't feel the need to make it known.
Irving was clearly ready to tear someone's head off for the oversight.
So, you're sure the passenger didn't get off later? Veda pried.
I mean, there's no way to tell for sure, other than nobody noticed a person crawling up out of the water at some point. They would have had to swim to shore, and even then, what would they do? They wouldn't have had resources of any kind. I think we simply had a miscount,
Irving replied. That makes more sense, I agreed with him. So, what sort of reflective surface was this body found with?
What do you mean, reflective surface?
Irving said, raising a brow at me. I'd completely forgotten that we hadn't filled him in on our theory. We'd gotten caught up in so many other tasks we'd left him out of the loop, this time accidentally. Well, Veda has a theory, and we got wrapped up with some other things, but basically, all the passengers died next to reflective surfaces. We think their own reflections were what they were shielding themselves from, I told him, trying to include an apology in my tone.
But some of them were in the middle of the street,
Irving replied, not ready to believe me.
Veda will explain her reasoning to you, I said, nodding to Veda to fill him in. Where is the body? I'll go check it out while she brings you up to speed on what we are thinking.
Irving pointed to his left, and Sophie and I went to find the body. Veda rambled on, letting Irving in on the details of our theory as we left. We had to push past various crime scene processors before we reached the deceased. At first, it did not surprise us at all. The body, a woman, was shriveled just like all the other passengers who had died randomly. That is where the similarity ended, however. Her hands weren't up by her face or being held up at all. Her eyes weren't struck with terror as the others had been. Most peculiar of all, however, is that she wasn't anywhere near a reflective surface. There wasn't so much as a pool of water anywhere around that could have cast her image back at her. She was just lying, peaceful-looking, in the middle of the street.
I don't want to say Veda was wrong, but this definitely doesn't bode well with her scared-to-death theory,
Sophie told me telepathically.
It may not, but I don't think she is wrong, I whispered in reply.
How can the theory not fit, but she still isn't wrong?
Sophie asked.
My first thought is that they died of 2 different things, I answered. Irving's suspicion that the passengers were simply miscounted doesn't sit well with me either.
So you think this woman got off the boat later and just died?
Sophie didn't sound like she believed a word I said. An idea struck that made my heart speed up a bit.
How
do we know this woman is a passenger at all?
Sophie stared up at me, no answer to give.
Well, don't I feel like an ass?
I think we all should. She may be dead similar to the passengers, but there isn't any way to tell by looking at her here that she is someone we don't know already. What if the town was right, and whatever is causing these deaths is communicable?
I hated that I had fear creeping up inside me.
We need to ask Irving, Sophie replied. Maybe he has another reason for thinking she's a passenger.
The two of us made our way back to Irving and Veda, who had just finished telling him our ideas about the deaths.
That is a crazy puzzle you put together, Irving told Veda.
A question for you, I said when Sophie and I walked up to them. What makes you think that woman on the ground is a passenger from the ship?
Irving stared at me, blinking. He reminded me of a cartoon character who was supremely stupid, being asked a basic question and their mind being blank. Eventually, he shook his head a little and shrugged slowly.
I just assumed.
You assumed?
Veda said, disappointment shaming him.
Irving, how could you assume a thing like that?
We ended up with a passenger that was unaccounted for. It made sense, he replied apologetically. Shit.
Okay, calm down, I told him. We simply don't know who that is. We shouldn't assume it isn't a passenger, just as we shouldn't assume it is. Irving, go take care of that. Call us when you figure it out, okay?
Yeah, will do, Irving said and hurried away.
It's been a while since I've seen a grown man embarrassed quite that badly, Veda said, feeling bad for her reaction.
I think Irving is a great human, but damn, he just blanks on the simplest things sometimes, I replied.
We need to fill Freya and Delaney in on what we found. At least we can try to find information on the Frederick Hommenlock guy while we wait for the results of the tests on the scale, Veda said.
Speaking of tests, why the hell aren't the autopsy results back yet? I asked, irritation bubbling up.
These things take time,
Veda replied, instantly defensive for her fellow scientists.
Well, if they take much longer, they'll end up with more bodies to autopsy than they have resources for, I grumbled.
Frederick, Veda whispered, taking hold of my arm and pushing me towards the van. Let's get to finding out who Frederick is.
My irritation didn't fade until we got to the travel agency, and even then it was only replaced by busy work. Freya needed more help than Delaney could give, so Sophie shifted into her human form, and she, Veda, and I jumped on the phones for a couple of hours. It was a nice distraction. When we had all the messages returned, Freya set the phones up to take more, and we all retreated into the conference room and plopped into chairs.
Dealing with people directly is exhausting, Veda told Freya.
It's not normally this bad, she answered.
Well, don't get too relaxed, I interjected. We still have work to do.
What do you mean?
Freya perked up. I filled Freya and Delaney in on what our morning had consisted of. They were both as irritated as I was with Irving by the time I got done telling them about it. We had to set that aside, however, and focus on doing what we could do. Figure out who Frederick Hommenlock was.
I'll get the projector set up, Freya said once she'd heard everything. At least we have something to do during all this incessant waiting.
I didn't say it, but I had a sinking feeling that we were going to wish for our boredom once all the information we were waiting for arrived.